This week, we'll discuss worker safety issues with California Labor Federation Executive Secretary Treasurer Art Pulaski. We'll also learn more about the impact of federal employee furloughs with AFGE Department of Defense Local 2228 Steward David Bamberg. But first, we've been joined by AFGE Council of Prison Locals President Dale Desotel. Dale, welcome back.
Thank you, Jason. Good to be back.
Dale, female employees from AFGE's Local 506 at the Coleman Federal Correctional Complex in Florida were granted class action status for a sexual harassment case, a first at the Department of Justice. What can you tell me about it?
It's a situation that many of our female employees face on a daily basis, and it had gotten so bad down at Coleman that the local had decided to start documenting and trying to report this to the agency that the inmates were constantly harassing them with all different kinds of gestures, some of them sexual, some of them grossly sexual. And so through their efforts of documenting and reporting this over the last several years, female employees were having trouble doing their job because they were dealing with these issues and dealing with them at home and dealing with them at work and trying to remain professional. And yet this badgering and this sexual harassment continued. And so we finally got enough of evidence to show the agency that what was going on, and the agency did not take enough steps, I suppose, to correct it. So here we are.
Have you been able to talk to anyone involved in this case to get a sense for the emotional toll that it might have taken on some of the workers?
Some of the ladies that work there have actually ended up in divorce. They can't function like they were. They've been exposed to some of these inmates, exposed themselves to them, doing sexual gestures and what have you, and it affected them enough to where it affected their sexual lives at home, which led to divorce in some cases. This is how extreme it has gotten. Some of them have had to go to counseling for their marriages. Some of them have gone to counseling to be able to remain employed there. It has a terrific It has had a terrific effect on some of them. Not all, but most of them.
Dale, you mentioned earlier about the agency's response, suggesting that maybe they didn't do enough, and we've noticed some media reports that have said the same thing. Given that, how important is this case, especially because it's the first class action status here that we're talking about?
I think it goes back to Title VII, when sexual harassment and discrimination came into being in the workplace to begin with. This is another landmark situation. This is reality in the federal prison system. The inmates perform these acts or gestures, and they can't be held accountable. Number one, there is no room to put them. There is, what actual punishment can you give them? Sexual offenders, as most people know, are in prison already. That's supposed to be their punishment. So now they're doing it in the prison. So now what do we do? You know, is there a law that would take care of it? Is there a law that would confine them to isolation? We can't do that. So with the overcrowding situation and the budget situation, I can't help but say the agency's hands are tied to some extent. Without locking the inmates up and keeping them locked down for their actions, thereby creating another problem in the prison system. So this is the options that we have are limited by what the laws say. A lot of these people are sexual offenders, and again, now they're doing it inside the prison. Do we ban females from working in prisons and discriminate against them that way? It's a question that needs to come to the surface, especially in light of the rights that inmates have and the rights that employees have. Which one supersedes?
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, and we're speaking with Dale Desotel, the president of AFGE's Council of Prison Locals. Dale, I think very clearly here we have a worker safety issue on our hands. And many times when you and I talk on this program, we talk about assaults within the federal prison system. In fact, we'll be getting to one later in this interview. Does the Bureau classify these incidents against these women as assaults?
Apparently not, because they don't take any action. There's four series, four levels of assault that takes place, and from 100 to 400, and those are the less violent. And at the most, that's what they're considered. But again, the local did the background, they did the research, and found that even when the employees filed incident reports against the inmates for their actions, for their harassment, for their gestures, we found them shredded. We found them not pursued. We find that they were, even the ones that were prosecuted, so to speak, the punishment was, you know, so much time in a segregated unit, which, if it wasn't violent, because of overcrowding and because of other violent issues, they were released over, you know, a day or two. So there was real no deterrent. There's really no deterrent to stop this. There's really no way to punish these people any more than having them incarcerated, unless we would put them out on an isolated island somewhere. I mean, that's just a wild gesture, but. What is the law, and what can we do within the realm of the law that would be a deterrent? Prosecute them and give them more time? I don't know. That's up to the courts. This is why we have this. We're trying to take care of the people that have already been harmed, so to speak, the employees. And I think this should bring the debate to the forefront on how do we deal with this now? Not only is it a problem in the public sector, but because we incarcerate them because of it, but then now we have it as a problem inside the institution. So now what do we do? And I don't think we have that yet, or we're not functioning, or we're not utilizing it to the point that it has an effect that it deters their actions.
Do you think, Dale, if there was a more forceful response on the part of the agency, that could in some way serve as a deterrent to the inmates if they knew that there would be some kind of consequences for their actions?
Absolutely. You know, if they lost their privileges, phone privileges, visiting privileges, educational privileges, you know, these are all privileges. Some things are not rights. But because we're overcrowded, it's hard to do that. And because we don't want to create an issue where we end up in a riot, we don't do that. Or because maybe we don't want the issue to become public, we don't do that. So these are the questions that I hope will be answered during this period of discovery and litigation and debate. Because if it has been a cover-up, then certainly the agency has to deal with the people that have not dealt with it. If they think it's adequate, then they have to show where they've used it. And if they've used it, all of the things that are at their disposal, everything that's available to them, and it's still not working, then we need to look at other avenues. And I don't think we can show that we've used everything at our disposal or that's available to us to create this deterrent. And again, you know, they're going to, you know, I'm sure they can look at budgetary issues. I know we can look at staffing levels, and I know we can look at overcrowding. And those are all things that contribute to the fact that it's hard for us to get a hold or to use everything and to deter this type of action.
Dale, what can you tell me about the overall challenges that women face working in the Bureau of Prisons, particularly at these facilities?
Well, any all-male institution certainly brings that challenge for a female. However, over the years, having women work in our prisons is, for the most part, a soothing an advantage for us. Inmates still, you can look at Mother's Day, and it's the most popular day for them as far as between Father's Day and any other holiday. They all want Mother's Day cards. And so a women's presence, a woman's presence, reminds them of their mother or grandmother or what have you. And it has a positive effect for the most part. But when you get in a situation where, for instance, at Coleman, it's a big complex. There's two penitentiaries there. There's four or five institutions there. And so we have a great number of inmates there. So the chances of you having a good effect are going to be slimmer because you have more inmates. And so, and nowadays we have more sexual offenders incarcerated than we had 20 years ago. So now it looks like we have a pattern where it's changing. But for the longest time, we still believe that a female in the institution has a positive effect for the staff and the inmates.
And Dale, despite the unfortunate situation around this case that we've been talking about, do you find that this might be an opportunity to ensure workplace safety, not just for women, but for all workers in the Bureau of Prisons, by taking a look at this situation, finding solutions, and finding ways to make things better?
Absolutely. When an issue like this surfaces at this level, then we know there's something there. Where there's smoke, there's fire. And to address the issue and bring it to the forefront and have an opportunity to look at it and to look at what the causes are and what the effects are and look at how we can address it and what needs to be done to address it is absolutely the way we do business. That's the way we take care of staff. We have to, first of all, identify the problem, claim it, and then begin to deal with it, break it apart, and see where we have to focus our initiative or focus our energy. And it's not always simple. And in this case, it will not be simple. It may take a number of things. It may take legislation, and certainly it will take money because of the overcrowding.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and up next, we'll continue our discussion with AFGE Council of Prison Locals President Dale Desotel.